We'll define this rain report for June 14, 2013 in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the semi-digital studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this rain report. As was the case last week, this week we're pushing the technical limits of this program. The rain report for June 14, 2013 includes a white box update. Chris Testa, KD2BMH, has been working the past year and more on what is being termed white box, defined in the 2013 Dayton Hamvention Forum Guide as an open hardware, software, low-power, handheld, software-defined radio project. In the following excerpt taken from his Tapper presentation, Chris talks about updates to his white box project. Here's Chris's talk.
I'm here to update you guys on my white box handheld software radio project, which I've been working on for about a year and a half now. But first, before I get into that, I want to give an update to the makers. In 2007, the Arduino came out. It was an 8-bit microcontroller for $25, and we tricked artists into coding C and making fun little LED programs, and it's been really cool to see. Just this past year, what are known as system on chips or SoC kits have really come out onto the field. And we're going from playing with Game Boy-style 8-bit microcontrollers to 32-bit microcontrollers, so you can make a Dreamcast, like a much, much more powerful system. And really, I think that this is all preparing us for a really big robotics kit revolution that's coming. If you see the MakerBot, you see the kind of idea what might be coming. So the big darling of the SoC maker revolution is the Raspberry Pi. What's great about it is the cheapest one is $25, and it has a huge community. Everybody loves it. The main issues with it is that the Broadcom chip that it uses is under NDA. No one has the data sheets except the guys who made the board, and there's a big open source group trying to implement all the drivers, but it's very hard to reverse engineer one of these chips and get everything there. My other problem with it is that there's no flash on it, there's no hard drive, doesn't come with an operating system, no cables. So for $25, it's not actually $25. You're looking more like a $45 price. And so this is the BeagleBone Black that came out just a few weeks ago. I'm not able to have one with me. You can't even get one right now. They're way sold out. But for $45, you get a ton of IOs all over the place. It includes flash hard drive, cables, and because it's a Texas Instruments processor, they did a really good job implementing the whole driver setup, and everything's really well supported. So if you want to make a project and you want like really good support of everything, I would say choose a BeagleBone Black. But the big con with it is that the community is not as large, and I don't think it ever will be as large. But you know, if you really just want to hack with some hardware and just have things work, I would say go for the BeagleBone Black. So one of the questions that needs to be asked is, what are these SoCs and why are we getting them? Why are they so cheap? Why are they everywhere? And if you look at the anatomy of a smartphone, this is from Samsung. This is a teardown of a Galaxy Note. You can see how there's so many parts to this device, and at the core of it is a system on a chip, or actually two, depending on the generation of the device. The main board is so tiny. Here's the main board for a Droid X, which is like a four-year-old phone. They're even smaller than this now. Other really cool things about it is, well, one, look at the name Anatomy. I didn't know what to call this, but Samsung talks about anatomy, like body. Like, this is very highly integrated package. The antennas are built right into the case. You know, there's so much there. And when you break it open and you look at all of these phones, this is kind of the architecture really for the 4G LTE devices, because they support so many frequencies and bands and protocols. They have one application processor that's like an ARM Cortex A class processor is what they call it. A for application. It's running something like Android. It's got floating point unit. It's got OpenGL, so 3D graphics. And what I think is the most important is it supports WebKit and can get you on the internet and you can browse the web. But there's so many things hooked up to it. There's a vibrator, flash. I mean, I won't go into all the pieces because I don't have enough time. But for instance, there's three microphones on every phone to do noise canceling. Then there's this link here between the application processor and the baseband processor. Like Qualcomm's Gobi modem would be the baseband processor in an iPhone. It does digital signal processing and has a real-time operating system. That is connected to that's sending baseband RF signals to another chip that is the actual RF transceiver. I don't know for any of the chips, they're all under NDAs. I don't know how they work on the inside, but they must be doing something like a software radio inside of them, doing quadrature modulation, demodulation. And then such a large portion of the bill of materials is devoted to all the bandpass filters, amplifiers, antenna switches to support all the different modes. So there's a lot of pieces in your phone. I mean, it's a full computer plus, so it's actually two full computers out of a phone. Diving down into those systems on a chip, what are they doing to fit all this stuff in there? Well, there's this main system bus, which ARM calls the AHB and APB bus. And this is kind of like your Northbridge or Southbridge chip. And so the ARM processor is hooked the really fast bus to the RAM, the flash, you know, and some external controllers there, and then a peripheral bridge to all of your extra stuff, all of these things. And they're fitting all of this on a single die. The size of your pinky nail fits a full computer. It's crazy. And every year, they're reducing the size of a transistor, adding more and more pieces to these things. The first phones had like two sensors on them. The latest Samsung Galaxy S4 boasts 9 sensors on it. I mean, it's just going to explode even still.
You're listening to a technical Tapper presentation by Chris Testa, KD2BMH, talking about the progress he has made the past year on his so-called white box SDR handheld project. We'll conclude Chris's talk in a moment. This is the RAIN Report, available on Twitter.
You are listening to The RAIN Report from www.therainreport.com.
I want to flip sides and talk about software radio because that's what I was interested in. I wanted to figure out how I could fit an open software radio inside of a smartphone form factor. So in a traditional software radio, you have a host computer doing a bunch of digital signal processing. It's connected over Ethernet to some other device that has an embedded controller that's hooked up to an FPGA that's doing digital down conversion, digital up conversion, ADCs and DACs. It could be a direct conversion receiver. I'm not working on a direct conversion receiver in your phone. Is not a direct conversion receiver. And that's mainly because if your power dissipation is very much a function of your clock frequency on your processor. So if you need your FPGA to be doing the mixing, then you need a very, very fast processor, or you need your FPGA fabric to be going very fast. But if you're doing everything at baseband, it's really a function of the bandwidth of your signal instead. So there's a really cool set of chips out there now. Every single FPGA manufacturer is now manufacturing FPGA systems on a chip. And this is the floor plan for an Actel Smart Fusion 2. I'm currently targeting the Actel Smart Fusion 1, but the Smart Fusion 2 just came out. Altera just this year came out with their Cyclone 5 part, and Xilinx has the Zynq 7000. And what's cool about this is this green section is the processor, the ARM, and then all of this is FPGA fabric. It's got a bunch of multiply accumulate blocks on it and a bunch of embedded RAM. And so your wire that connected Ethernet between your computer and your software radio peripheral is now this APB bus that's right on the chip. So you've shrunk everything to a much, much smaller form factor. The other enabling technology to make a really small device are these really highly integrated quadrature transceiver chips. The one I'm using is the CMX991. It operates from 100 megahertz to 1000 megahertz. There's an asterisk there because after some modifications, I'm actually looking to operate it down to 5 megahertz up to 1,000 megahertz. But you'll probably have to switch some matching networks on the board, so your mileage may vary on that wide bandwidth. But there's different options. So this Lime microchip, I don't know if anyone's heard of the Blade RF, which was a recently successful Kickstarter project. They based their project off of this Lime microchip. Didn't go down as low as I wanted, but it has an integrated ADC and DAC. And then there's even this Maxim chip that's really focused on the 2.4 gigahertz ISM bands. It's got an integrated antenna switch, amplifiers for becoming kind of like this software-defined Wi-Fi chip or Bluetooth chip. So all those are really fun, look like fun to play with. So this is my smashing together of taking a traditional smartphone and then tying in the FPGA SoC and the integrated quadrature transceiver to make this small form factor software radio that can be operated off of battery supply. And this is the first alpha prototype put together. So this is an AM335X starter kit from Texas Instruments. It has the same processor that's in a BeagleBone, but it has a nice touchscreen on top of it. You can see how by properly setting up the Linux kernel, you can have the system hop in and out of suspend mode, you know, which your phone is doing all the time right now because you're not using your phone. Well, maybe some of you are. It's off. And then as soon as you click the button, it's actually coming out of suspend, loading back into RAM, and off you go. And it can do it like that. My results were, so this was the first sine wave I got to come out of the FPGA and encode to the DAC. Here was the first AM modulated signal that I snapped. My big issue, I missed a resistor on a filter and it messed up all of my nets in this one area. And I tried my best. I mean, I cut this thing so many times with an X-Acto knife and, you know, I got it to work for a while, but eventually I just ended up with this nasty ring. So I'm also very excited to be letting you guys know that I've posted all of my code and schematics up on GitHub. So, you know, go check it out, fork it, follow it, whatever you want to do with it. I have one project up there that converts it into a GNU radio peripheral over UDP, and another project where I use Python to design and generate a signal generator, and then Python actually transpiles into Verilog, and then that gets synthesized and put onto the device. So you can design your stuff using SciPy and higher level languages and ideas, and then focus on your state machine and all those other aspects, and then you can see what it looks like using the Actel or whichever company you want to use. You can use any of the flash-based or the SoC FPGAs to try this. So the changelog, everything's now done in kernel drivers, bring up the system. I now support a 10 megahertz ref in for all the clock nuts. I moved to supporting, it was 100 megahertz to a gigahertz. Now I'm looking to support 5 megahertz to a gigahertz by following an application note and making a bunch of changes. I moved to an IF SAW filter versus a crystal filter that was there before. Went from 8-bit to 10-bit ADC and DAC. Added a DAC low-pass filter. That should say DC bias. I added bias. I properly impedance matched the traces this time. You can look at the first board. It was just, can I get everything on a board with a single supply? And then this one was, can I get it to actually be a properly functioning radio? And you can also now, it can either be operated from an external supply or via USB. So you can just plug it in your computer. And it's also now plug compatible with the smart Fusion 2. So when those chips later this year, the Smart Fusion 2, like every technology, the new chip ends up being cheaper than anything else by the time they ramp up production. So by the end of the year, we'll all be using Smart Fusion 2 if you want to play with this stuff, because that's what will be out there. Further work, there's 12 units. I made 12 of them. I'm looking for people to do hardware, software, you know, really play with this thing and bring it up to speed. I think that all the Tapper special interest groups really line up with what this device needs. So if you're involved in any of these groups or would like to be, you should become a Tapper member. You should join these special interest groups, and that's a great way to get involved with my project. I'd love to work on getting a better analog front end. I've learned a lot even since making this board about how to improve it. You could play with different IQ transceiver chips and still use the same FPGA. I have not dealt with the amp duplexer, diplexer issue yet. I'm really just working on getting the Lego blocks working. Now, as far as software goes, there's kernel development, digital signal processing, user programs, all sorts of stuff. And then, well, that's not really software. That's more hardware, hooking up audio codecs, speakers, microphones, really turning it into a handheld and not just, you know, I have the core, but now we can build the rest of it out. I'd like to thank all these people. So many people have helped me. I've had many people help me with the layout, with schematic reviews. The amateur radio community has been a huge help. Many, many retired, really smart guys have given me a lot of time, and I very much appreciate it. For anyone who's on Facebook, you can like the Facebook page, and that's a great way to keep updates and what's going on.
This has been an excerpt from a technical presentation during the Tapper Forum at the recently completed Dayton Hamvention by Chris Testa, KD2BMH. His topic dealt with progress he made this past year on his white box handheld SDR project. The Rain Report is copyright 1990, 2013 Rain, all rights reserved. Now, for everyone connected with the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Rain Report. www.therainreport.com.